Hello, it's time for another episode of Halfway to Infinity, a collection of original short stories. Today, in the early days of the Victorian era, a young woman goes to see a doctor, and she knows far more about him than he realizes. The Fate of the Ghosts. Mary hurried along with small, urgent steps. She was wrapped up against the autumn wind that lifted the scattered dead leaves, sending them up in ghostly spirals to float about the small windows of the servants' quarters on the top floors of the grand terrace of Georgian houses. As she passed each residence, she recited the house number to herself. 23, 24, 25. She stopped and looked down to check the number against the address scrawled on the paper in her hand. She climbed the stone steps to the large, imposing black door. Beside it was an engraved brass plate. Dr. Edward Blake, Professor of Empirical Psychology and Logic. She took her hand from the warm, fur muff and pulled the black lever on the railing to ring the doorbell. Turning from the door, she stood, waiting in the cold air, watching the soft clouds of her breath that hung briefly before the wind snatched them away. The door was opened by a young servant girl who silently led Mary to the reception room. Dr. Blake will be with you shortly. The girl turned and quickly left. Mary walked across the darkly furnished room. She stopped by a heavy bookcase next to a crackling warm fire. She glanced over the many books in their red and brown leather bindings. Reaching up, she pulled one from the shelf and opened it on a random page. She read aloud. The various organs of sense require various kinds of stimulations to excite them into action. Erasmus Darwin, Zoonomia, I believe. Mary turned, surprised. In the doorway stood a tall, well-dressed man in his late 40s. My apologies, Dr. Blake. I have always loved books, and your library is quite beautiful. You may borrow that if you wish. Mary turned and placed the book back on the shelf. Thank you, Dr. Blake, but it is a book I am already familiar with. The doctor walked into the room. Please be seated and tell me how I may be of assistance. Mary sat on a red velvet chaise longue, and from her fabric purse removed a folded piece of paper. The doctor settled into a parlour chair opposite. I should perhaps read this to you first, Dr. Blake. It will shed some light on my current situation. Please do. She unfolded the paper and read. My dearest sister, of all our blood, you were the only one who understood. But even you, my dearest Mary, could not pass beyond the sunlight into the realm of the ghosts as I have. Only I have truly seen them, in corporeal bodies of vapour, drops of ethereal dew. They pass through us, dear Mary, damp souls that send shivers through our liquid selves. We turn our backs on our ghosts, for they are fearsome, but they in turn are fearful of us, of our ignorance, of our unwillingness to see our fates. Mary paused, the letter loose in her hand. Go on, said the doctor gently. She continued. I had hoped that my pen would tame the ghosts and bring them to my will, but my words have instead chained me to them. I understand that now. I see it in the faces of those that had once loved me, but that now stare afraid as though I am some madman still loose in the world. I am already of the ghosts, my dearest sister. It is of little matter that I shed this skin now. What love remains I give to you, my dear Mary. Look for me, in the wind and the soft touches. That is the end of the letter. She folded it carefully and placed it back into the bag. The following day he threw himself into the River Severn. He was a troubled young man, it seems. Dr. Blake, he was a spoilt child living off a small inheritance and the generosity of friends. He thought himself of too delicate a nature to toil as most men his age, so he chose to be a poet, but he had little talent for the art, as can be seen from the letter. The best he could achieve was to affect a poetic soul. It was an easy deceit for him, just a fancy, as a man might take fancy to a new coat or servant girl. People do not kill themselves over a new coat. No, Dr. Blake, but many men have ruined themselves over a servant girl. Indeed. My brother threw himself into the Severn because he was a lover of tragedy. I suspect he never intended to die. He likely imagined himself washed up upon the river bank, the tragic tale of the desperate poet for whom even the comfort of death was denied. Dr. Blake, I am here because my brother haunts me, perhaps not as one of his ghosts, but as a presence nonetheless. You are a man of science. You know the mind of man. My brother did not understand the ghosts that haunted him, but I understand mine. I wish to be cleansed of them. The doctor stood and walked to the window. He looked down upon the street and the carriages pushing through the autumn wind. "Those who take their own life cannot enter heaven, Miss Ashton," he said. "Heaven, Dr. Blake? You desire to know my religious sensibilities. Well, my father was a bishop. He was murdered when I was 16. The doctor turned to Mary. "I am sorry to hear that." "Don't be, Dr. Blake. The boy who killed my father claimed that he was defending himself, that my father had forced himself upon him. The boy was indeed guilty of killing my father, but he was the most innocent of boys. He trusted God, and they hanged him for it."
"You had reason to believe the boy?"
"My father loved my brother, sister, and I, but not as his children. Yes, I believed the boy."
"Your sister?"
"She is now with the staff of an eminent local gentleman." "Dr. Blake, I am aware of your views on transmutation, and I believe we are somewhat aligned in our opinion of God. I wish you to help me."
The doctor turned away from the window.
"Miss Ashton, within these walls I have little need for the mores of the common world. I am an explorer after truth, and truth lies at the edge of understanding, at the boundary of what science has taught us. It is a dark place, for the candle of science is weak against the darkness of ignorance. Are you willing to undertake the journey?"
"Into darkness?" "Yes."
"Then we shall begin."
From his pocket, he took out a small brass key and walked a few paces to a large cabinet.
"I shall require from you total trust. We have not met previously, and I very much doubt we shall meet again after today. But in this room, now, you must not question my methods."
He unlocked the cabinet and opened the doors to reveal a mass of papers and instruments of brass and glass. He took out an apothecary bottle. Inside, a thick, brown liquid.
"What would you have me do?" asked Mary.
"Remove all your clothes and lie there upon the chaise longue."
"I am to be naked?"
"Yes."
"With you in attendance?"
"Yes."
"Because you are a doctor?"
"Yes, but also because I am a man, and in revealing yourself so completely to me, you are revealed also to yourself. For you alone shall undertake the journey to examine closely the secret workings of your mind, Miss Ashton. There is no instrument that can reveal that to others."
"I am to be both patient and physician?"
"You say you understand your ghosts, but have you yet faced them?"
He walked up to Mary.
"The ghosts are not of this outer world, Miss Ashton. No instrument can record their presence, their cries, their anguish. They cannot live out in the same air as us. That is the fate of the ghosts, for they are of the living. After our death, the ghosts are no more. They are kept alive in the living memory. If you wish to be rid of them, you must seek them within and cast them out yourself." Mary stood. Then let them be revealed. She removed her coat and placed it carefully on the seat beside her. Sitting again, she reached down to unbutton her boots. Dr. Blake picked up a small brass bell, which he rang briefly before returning to the cabinet and its untidy collection of papers and instruments. The servant girl returned, carrying a tray with a small bowl of steaming water and a towel with a little silver spoon on top. She placed the tray down on a small table next to the doctor, then left. As Mary undressed, the doctor removed the glass stopper from the bottle and poured a little of the thick, concentrated liquid into the hot water. He stirred it with the small silver spoon. "You appear to have an interest in the natural world, Miss Ashton. Are you familiar with the Linnaean Society?" "I am, indeed. It is tasked with the exploration of the natural world, to uncover the secrets of God, so to speak. You are a member, I believe, but there is something of an impediment to my understanding of its inner workings."
"An impediment?" asked the doctor distractedly as he worked on the mixture.
"As you can see, Dr. Blake."
The doctor looked up from the tray. Mary stood before him, naked.
"I am a woman. The Linnaean Society has many members, Dr. Blake, but no women. We are barred from entering."
The doctor looked a moment at Mary.
"Women have a different role to play, Miss Ashton. It is the natural order."
The doctor placed the small spoon on the towel and picked up the bowl. Mary lay herself down. The doctor walked over and sat on the edge of the chaise longue.
"So, Dr. Blake, you believe that it is the natural order for women to serve men, to serve their needs?"
"Miss Ashton, it is the role of science to illuminate the truth of the natural world. As unjust as you may believe it to be, science has clearly revealed the natural dominance of the male over the weaker sex. I cannot imagine a woman braving the dangers of the high Andes as I have done, to bring back such a medicine as this."
He raised the bowl.
"It is not opium?" "No, Miss Ashton. Opium distracts the mind. What I have created here will open it. Science has done much more to reveal the mind of man than any revelation of the church."
Mary sat up behind the doctor and reached out for the bowl, her fingers light on the doctor's hand, her body pushing softly against his back.
"With all due respect, Dr. Blake, the female of the human species has understood the mind of man far longer than any religion or science."
She closed her fingers around the bowl and lifted it from the doctor's grasp.
"Let's begin," she whispered.
With sudden violence, she thrust the bowl up into the doctor's face. The edge slammed into the bridge of his nose, the hot liquid splashing into his eyes and down his face. Instantly, Mary swung around and pushed the doctor down into the velvet seat. The bowl fell, smashing on the floor, the shards cutting into Mary's feet as she struggled against the doctor. Confused and blinded by the liquid, the doctor flailed his arms, trying to get a grip, but the chaise longue slipped from under him, and the doctor slammed hard against the floor. Mary sat heavy on his chest, pinning down his arms, his legs kicking uselessly against the carpet. Through the blurring hot liquid, he saw a figure stand over him. He stopped struggling as he realized it was the servant girl. She was holding the open apothecary bottle.
"Alice?" he said quietly.
"No, doctor. My real name is Louise. Louise Ashton. Yes, Dr. Blake, I am Mary's sister. I came into your employ to escape my past, to escape the church and the memories of what our father did to us and our brother. But here I found the same hell being played out week after week, only this time in the name of science. How many women have you debased while they are deep in the dreams you gave them with this?"
She knelt beside him, holding the bottle close to his face.
"Time to dream, doctor."
She upturned the bottle over the doctor's mouth. The heavy, thick liquid dripped like honey.
The doctor turned his head away, but Louise grabbed his hair and twisted it tight. The doctor screamed. She forced the bottle into his open mouth. Coughing and spluttering on the thick liquid, he bit down on the glass, which cracked, then shattered as Louise pushed the fractured bottle harder. The silver slivers of glass sliced his lips and cut deep into his gums and tongue as the thick honey liquid mixed with the blood. The gold of the late afternoon sun lit the room. Mary was standing, still naked, her body smeared with blood. In one hand she held an open razor, in the other a bloody mass of flesh. She walked over to the fire and dropped the blooded meat onto the flaming coals, where it sizzled and cooked like a suckling pig. She turned to Louise, who sat staring at the open wound between the doctor's naked legs. "Well, my dear sister," Mary said, "it would appear the Linnaean Society has one less member." Halfway to infinity.